We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Alex, I actually saw Lee Corso this weekend in the flesh about 10 or 15 feet away from me. He was doing the thing where he leaves from the set to go into the bus to kind of hang out while kind of Pat McAfee kind of takes over for him in his stead on the College Game Day set. I was at Red River, Oklahoma, Texas this weekend.
Did you tell Lee that he appears at the beginning of Split Zone Duo? I mean, he must know.
I did not, but I think he knows. I think he knows.
I assume he wakes up thinking about it every day, if you really get down to the matter. That's Richard Johnson. I'm Alex Kirshner. Richard, this was a funky college football Saturday for you and me. Funky for me because this was the first Saturday in many years that was almost entirely caught up on after the fact by me. I was at a fall wedding, which as we know, we are pro fall weddings here.
I'm going to one on Friday night.
Like, look, these... It is what it is. The weather is great in the fall. People are going to have weddings in the fall. It's going to be what it is. The beauty of YouTube TV is that you can catch up after the fact. But I will say it is a weird way to perceive games that you know how they already ended. So I had a very interesting Sunday watching a lot of football and catching up on a lot of football with hindsight. Richard, you had a weird Saturday because you were at what I think year in and year out, and not just because of the Texas State Fair and its various fried foods, is the weirdest marquee rivalry game in college football. How was it?
Yeah. And it's funny because I actually do that, what you're describing, pretty often. You know, when I go to a game, I don't get to see pretty, you know, a lot of what happens. And so that it happens to me a lot. But yes, my first Red River, the game is absolutely box office. There are a lot of rivalries, and the most extreme version of this joke is the joke we make at Bedlam, where we say anything can happen in Bedlam. But there are a lot of rivalries that we say, oh, anything can happen any year. No, anything can happen in Red River. Anything often does happen in Red River. I mean, it really is quite something. It's an incredible scene. I mean, first and foremost, like it obviously, as somebody who does Florida Georgia or has done Florida Georgia fairly often, it's the closest comp. I actually do think they're pretty different because a state fair is very, very different than the tailgating scene at an NFL stadium. So I love them both, but I think that, you know, Red River is very unique. The Cotton Bowl is, one day you'll go and you'll realize it's insane that we do this thing at the Cotton Bowl when you actually go to the Cotton Bowl. Oh. I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's just like
but not in a good way either.
Right. Not necessarily in a good way.
let's talk about the game, but first let's hear from Toby Rowland on the Sooner Sports Network from Learfield.
23 seconds. Gabriel has the football, looks to throw. He's under pressure. He lobs in zone. Touchdown!
Download the new Varsity Network app, available for both Apple and Android. Listen to college sports live with the Varsity Network app. Alex, 30 minutes on the clock to go 30-ish minutes in time in 3, 2, 1. Again, Oklahoma 34, Texas 30. Again, box office game. Like, literally from play one, we're on here. It was a lot of fun, and it was a great game. Look, I think on Texas's end, first and foremost, Oklahoma won this game. This was not a gave it away situation. This was not a fluke. They went toe to toe. Oklahoma had the pen last. Dylan Gabriel legacy drive 74 yards down the field in 5 plays. He cements himself in the lore of this rivalry game for taking this game. I think Texas on offense really missed the center. Both of these defenses whipped ass up front all day. And I think when Texas's center goes down on like the first drive, well, I guess the second drive, because Quinn Ewers threw a pick on the first. I think they really missed him throughout the rest of the game. Probably no more apparent than on the goal line stand. I know there's a lot going on there, but the goal line stand, particularly in that first down play, was not awesome. I don't love throwing the ball to Xavier Worthy, who's like 150 pounds soaking wet on the goal line on that screenplay. I'm sure they've run it before to success. Don't love it. But again, he almost scored. But that was the thing we talked about that could get Texas during the week. it's that red zone offense and not being able to finish. Both of these teams scored, gained over like 500 yards. I mean, they moved the ball, but Texas can score. Oklahoma could. And that's even with rampant special teams miscues for the first quarter and change of this game. This game really did have just about everything. And it was really awesome.
So for me, I need to not overplay the victory of that because I thought Texas would win the game. But I hope that you, and I especially hope that Godfrey is back on Wednesday, now see the vision with Oklahoma. This is a great football program that almost every year is going to be good enough to win games like this. And I don't know that they're going to pull 12-0. I now do suspect that they're going to win 11 or 12 in the regular season, partially because of
I think we're going to see these two teams play again.
I think so, too. I think that the Big 12's old version, sort of half-old version, is going out kind of the way that it came in, with Texas and Oklahoma being significantly better than everybody else. I think it's important what you said there, Richard, that this wasn't like Texas booted it away. Like, these are two good football teams. One of the interesting things about Oklahoma that I think might be a distraction in a way for us analyzing them is that we're a few weeks removed from that incredibly dumb Jeff Lebby thing that obviously revealed some alignment issues between the coach and an assistant and the athletic director and all of that. And the way that I like to perceive the sport, I know the way that Godfrey likes to perceive it, that is often indicative of something that becomes a mess on the field, but it also doesn't always work out that way. Like, they can still call plays. They still run fast. Dylan Gabriel's still a pretty good quarterback. The defense can finally play football at an acceptable level for a pretty good to great team in college football. It's Oklahoma football. Gravity says they're going to be good, and they're really good again. I think it's clear that it was an anomaly last year.
I do contend that the one thing that is going to get this Oklahoma team got is if somebody can rush Dylan Gabriel with proper rush lanes. You know, Dylan Gabriel was killing. He was the only running game Oklahoma had in this game. And if they don't necessarily find one until these teams meet again the first weekend in December, we'll see how that plays out if Texas can rush Dylan Gabriel with proper rush integrity and proper rush lanes.
Richard, the night before this game, I was jealous. Looked like you got to hang out with our dear friends from Home Field Apparel in Dallas.
I did. Shout out to the homie Josh. We hung out at the W Hotel down there in downtown Dallas. There were two fraternity semi-formals, which is very interesting. They weren't wearing Home Field Apparel, which is a sin. You should all be wearing Home Field Apparel at all times. Take our promo code SZD20 to get 20% off of your first order at homefieldapparel.com.
Iowa State 27, TCU 14. The rest of the Big 12, Richard, is not currently looking as good as Oklahoma and Texas. And
Mid 12.
In particular, I think if you looked at the conference coming into this year, you would have thought, all right, who are the teams other than Texas that look like it could be pretty good this year? TCU, owing to the fact that they just played in the freaking national championship game, would have been one of those teams, but it's a 7-win team. If you look at TCU this year, they're going to win 7 games, maybe 8. This is just not the same version of these guys. Good for Iowa State for getting it together. They've won 3 now. They're 3-3, a season that looked like it could get away from them, given the roster breakdown before the season amid a gambling scandal. They haven't forgotten how to play defense. And they do have a good young quarterback, Rockerbeck, who did not really show that in this game. But they have stabilized things to an extent that I wasn't sure they would.
Texas Tech 39, Baylor 14. Not stable at Baylor, despite what you saw last weekend in the comeback against UCF. They can't stop the run. Texas Tech ran all over them, absolutely all over them, and they couldn't stop them.
And they scored 14 points against a defense that has not been all world and gave up quite a few to Houston, albeit most of those in the first half the week before. Kansas 51, UCF 22. Richard, an adjustment period for UCF, which has as many Big 12 wins as I do.
Yeah, Gus and company knew this was going to be a betting in period. Obviously, they should have won the Baylor game, but I think they knew this was going to be a betting in period. It's 0-3. It's not how anybody wants it to look, but long-term vision there.
Oklahoma State 29, Kansas State 21. I don't know why I'm reading it so weirdly. One of the surprises of the week for me, and a game I did watch in pretty large part live, good for Oklahoma State. They have one quarterback now. I think this is pretty much settled, and it's Alan Bowman. No more of the QB triad that they were running out there at the beginning of the year. They benefited from some significant Will Howard charity in this game, one of which was returned for a touchdown the other direction. But Kansas State, which is probably your best hope of a non-Oklahoma Texas rematch, suffers a significant blow here.
LSU 49, Mizzou 39, pick six at the end to give LSU the 49 here. It was as close as you expect. Mizzou had it, and then they didn't. This is what happens when two elite offenses, I think, play good or fine defenses. I don't know if elite's the best term, but pretty good offenses play good or fine defenses. Maybe bad, depending on if you're an LSU fan, how you look at things.
Hey, they came through in the end in a way that they did not the week before. And LSU fans will take that for now. Alabama 26, Texas A&M 20. Richard, I still think my company line is that Bama's going to find a second loss somewhere. But needless to say, the chances of that happening go down with every game like this that they don't lose.
Look, we'll come around to the LSU game when we get to it in about a month. I think this game was pretty clear. They came into this game and said, look, we're not going to be able to run the ball down Texas A&M's throat because Texas A&M has one of the better fronts in college football. What we're going to do is damn the torpedoes on this secondary that really struggles to play. And, I mean, Miami did it. And Alabama did it. And the object of Alabama affection here was number 26, Josh Dewberry, a lot of times. I mean, it's a full secondary effort to get beat like this, but that guy got torched by Jermaine Burton. I mean, Jermaine Burton has almost 200 yards receiving, a career day by him. I think 320-ish
from Jalen Milroe. Alabama wide receiver game. He had an receiver game. The likes of which used to be more common, but they needed it.
They came into this game, I think, with a plan, and they said, we're going to run this till you stop it. And A&M wasn't really able to stop it over the course of the game. And then, the Jimbo punting at 4th-and-1 at the plus 45.
Bobby's going to kill him, or one of them's going to kill the other. Yes.
That's the Jimbo thing. He's been doing it since Florida State.
Ole Miss 27, Arkansas 20. Pain continues in Fayetteville and will until morale improves.
I know Ole Miss's defensive front is better, but Arkansas really struggled to run the ball here overall. There were some offensive line chopping and changing in this game of note, but I think Arkansas still trying to find something consistent on offense. I think defense gave you about what you needed, but offense, no.
Georgia, many. Kentucky, few.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Kentucky white class game. Kentucky can do this to teams in and around approximately its weight class. Kentucky cannot do this to a team that is more talented than them. Georgia is more talented than them. Kentucky is SEC Iowa, except Kentucky will actually average 25 points a game.
Ohio State 37, Maryland 17. Richard, coming in, my view was eyebrow is raised. And I think that it was vindicated to raise the eyebrow, but Maryland simply ran out of steam in the fourth quarter. And I'm glad that they did, because if Maryland had lost because of the 3 points that were left on the field right before halftime via atrocious game management by some combination of Mike Locksley, Josh Gattis, and Talia Tagovailoa, that would have really hurt. If they'd have lost because they kicked a field goal in close in the first half, that would have really hurt. It was good to just lose to a better team. A fun little personal life story is that there's going to be tons of wedding pictures from the event I was at this week of the guys beforehand while we're sitting in the holding area or whatever, hooting and hollering. We interrupted vows, screaming for a Maryland touchdown early in the third quarter in this game. And then we're going to look back and say, what was the score? And we lost by 20. Didn't cover. It's Maryland football. Just move on.
I did. Look, there's a reality where Maryland wins this game. Sometime. And I don't think it's that far. I mean, Ohio State did not send their best on that. Well, one person on Ohio State sent its best. It's number 18. The others on Ohio State did not necessarily send their best. Ohio State could not block Maryland in this game.
By the
for
way,
about three and change quarters.
Because we are a national podcast and there's a lot more national interest in Ohio State by multiples fold over Maryland. Ohio State was stuck on 16 rushing yards in this game into the third quarter. I think that my conclusion from this game is that I will be picking Michigan to win that game. And Penn State will see. It's iffy right now for Ohio State if there isn't significant improvement.
There's Michigan 52. There's going to be a national incident at the end of the season.
They're very much
going to lose both of those games.
Michigan 52. Minnesota 10. There is something to be said at this point for just how badly Michigan is treating bad defined teams.
Yeah. And we're saying it, by the way. And we've said it for the last like 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's a masterclass every week. There is nothing even approaching weakness that appears when you watch Michigan against this caliber of team. Wisconsin 24. Go ahead.
Well, Alex, the one quick point there is this is what you want. You want, if you're going to play teams that you outclass, you don't just beat them. You have to erase them. That's what Georgia did the last couple of years. Don't beat teams you're better than, erase them. Michigan has done that. See you on Veterans Day.
Wisconsin 24, Rutgers 13. Wisconsin is still not getting the offensive results that you wanted under Phil Longo. But I think the good news is that Ches Malusa goes down. They apparently have yet another running back, Jackson Acker, who can share the load effectively with Braylon Allen. Go figure, Wisconsin running backs grow on trees or from the ground, probably because it's Wisconsin. They just find these guys, and they seem to have another one.
Nebraska 20, Illinois 7. Illinois is not very good.
Illinois is, I think, very much not very good, and the party looks like it's over from last year. Iowa 20, Purdue 14. Of note, Richard, and we have to call this one out, Iowa had a chance to run up the total at the end of this game, as we have been thinking they would all year, and they did not.
And they have in previous games.
They actually kneeled the clock out here. Caleb Johnson, though, had a nice 67-yard touchdown run on what I think you probably got a better – you have a better play ID brain than me, but it certainly looked like it was half the name of this show. It looked like a split zone run that was just brilliantly blocked, you know, with an H-back coming across the formation, zone blocking elsewhere. No one said that they can't block and that they can't get some offensive linemen who play football at Iowa. They ultimately get the difference in this game on a really nice, well-blocked 67-yard touchdown run.
Yeah, I get Iowa kind of – with a backup quarterback, I get Iowa salting the game away here, by the way. They're not going to get the 25-point thing, and they're not going to fire him. That's my bold prediction for how this ends.
We'll see. But it is legal. It is legal if you're winning the game at the end of it to drop down to one knee and allow the clock to expire.
Advisable, even.
It seems that not every well-paid coach in college football is aware of this. Richard, Georgia Tech 23, Miami 20. You texted me. I was at the after party. Again, I hadn't been watching live football on this day. I had to do my catching up on like late Saturday and all day Sunday. And you said, you're not going to believe the Miami ending. And I said, oh, I bet I will. You know, we watch a lot of college football. Like, okay, like I get they probably messed it up. It's Mario Cristobal. He probably messed something up. I was not prepared for how bad it was.
And you originally just saw the pass at the end.
Yes, I originally was like, well, how is there nobody back there? How can you catch the ball on the run behind the safeties given the play? But that's not even 30% of why it is as bad as it is. And everyone knows. We're recording this on Monday. You've already seen it. You know that they could have ended the game by kneeling down. Mario chose not to do that. A lot of people I saw were comparing this to the ending of that Stanford-Oregon game, 2018 or 2019.
Which I get, but no.
No, it's this is not the same.
Orders of worse. Magnitude worse. It's, in my opinion, almost night and day worse.
Oh, way worse. I mean, in that game, a first down by CJ Verdell had value. It ices the remaining couple of seconds that Stanford would have been left with the ball. This was just something that a small child would not have done if they play even a little bit of video games football. Like, Mario, I think, has earned the reputation. He is a horrific coach on game day in the fourth quarter in a close game. Horrific. Not just like not as good as he is at program building or recruiting, but he is horrific it raises issues about if this guy can learn and grow. I mean, he makes too much money to do this. It's like, at some point, and we think they're pretty good, like down to down. We've said that.
Yes.
But like, yes, at some point, they're going to be even better and they're going to blow an even bigger game by doing something probably not this dumb, but pretty dumb. Just, it's simply unforgivable.
I will never be able to fathom that this happened. It's insane. I woke up Sunday morning, like, still thinking about it. I mean, it's like, I understand that he fumbled. I understand that
people fumble.
They botched, but like,
people botched coverages.
None of those Miami players should have been put in the situation for that to happen.
The fault is 100% the coach. Running backs fumble even when they shouldn't. College kids blow coverages. They let guys behind them. You're not supposed to forget to kneel the ball to end the game. Louisville 33, Notre Dame 20. How about five, Louisville?
How about Louisville? 6-0. Doing a great job, obviously. Five turnovers and a turnover on downs here from Notre Dame, man. I just like...
Oh, five I don't and, take, so six. Oy.
Objectively. And like, yeah, it gets a little wonky because they technically have four turnovers and two turnovers on downs, but they had a fumble on the turnover. You get it. Not awesome here from Notre Dame. Was Louisville the better team? Yes. Was Louisville two scores better here? Not sure. And
that's
you
fine.
Give the ball away five times, Notre Dame, and you're like, I don't know. And now it's going to be a Marcus Freeman dialogue for all the, like, it's tough.
You are ultimately what your record says that you are. Clemson
USC
17.
On Saturday.
Yep, that's going to be fun. In South Bend, too, so I think Notre Dame will get up for it. Clemson 17, Wake Forest 12. Richard, do you mean to tell me that Wake Forest was pretty competitive in a Clemson game and ultimately did not win? Is that what you're telling me happened here?
You have seen this Clemson game over and over and over again since Trevor Lawrence left school.
Although, I think that judging by how things went here, Clemson did not spend the day getting torched by Wake's receivers here. It was a better defensive effort than, for instance, it was in 2022.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, yeah. You haven't seen this exact Clemson-Wake game, I should say. I should say you've seen this exact Clemson game. This is that Clemson performance. No explosive passes. Going to run the ball pretty effectively. Defense is going to do what it needs to do. Clemson wins.
North Carolina 40, Syracuse 7. Is North Carolina, not Clemson, the second best team in the ACC?
I'm here for this, by the way. And I've been here for this since they absolutely blew the doors off of Carolina in week one. South Carolina in week one.
I have a question. I think everyone acknowledges and agrees about what Drake May is. He's a special player and they have him and most teams don't. Is Uncle Gene getting that defense figured? I don't know. He might be. Gene Chizik is doing, well, North Carolina's defense is doing, someone is doing, and typically we do credit coordinators for such things, as well as the players. A good job.
And you may have missed this last week, but the NCAA granted receiver Tez Walker's waiver. He played in this game. He had a sick catch on the sideline in this game. And he will fill out that wide receiver room for North Carolina and give them a boost. The NCAA kind of like wagged their finger at Carolina and said, you should have given us whatever evidence it is that we used to clear him earlier. It was weird. Signed by NCAA President Charlie Baker. It's a weird
and UGA's story. President, Jerry Moorhead, who is on the relevant committee or leads the relevant committee. NC State 48, Marshall 41. This one requires a bit more of a microscope because it wasn't exactly the kind of game that 48-41 indicates. NC State plays with a new QB, MJ Morris, as you previewed on the midweek show. They score 48 against a good defense, so you think that they are really revving it up there after having a nothing offense for most of the season. They do that to some extent, but this was also a field position game. Just the way that the game state evolved and with the return plays and the punts and the kicks, they started at their own 41 on average, which is just a tremendous advantage against any team that you are going to play. The big play is a 62-yard Trent Penix touchdown. Very nice. Also had another nearly 40-yard Mike Allen touchdown run. So NC State, despite somewhat of a lack of efficiency, had short fields, had big plays. It's a good recipe.
Boston College 27, Army 24. It's pretty good for BC to get Army coming off a bye week here when I believe Army was favored, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, BC, I think we are on the record as to how both of us feel about them, but they have prevented outright disaster by getting away from Holy Cross with that win, and by getting away from UVA, a very bad UVA, with a close win, and getting away from Army with a very close win. Like, things could be so much worse, and they're very close to being so much worse. And maybe you bake that into your evaluation of Jeff Hafley and that staff, but wins are wins, and you only get to play 12 games a year, so it's really valuable to win games. Richard, USC 43, Arizona 41, three overtimes. Not the cleanest coach game in the world, though not the least clean of the week, at least.
Okay. So, look, I will trend, maybe not even trend, I will invite the opportunity for optimism about USC's defense. If they're going to continue to perform as they did in the last three quarters of regulation, overtime is overtime. But Arizona comes out, backup quarterback, scores 17 points like that, and you're like, oh, here we go again. Also, they're down 17-0. And then they tightened up. I think it was only 11 points for the rest of regulation in the last three quarters. A turnover, some stops. Eventually you do that. Caleb Williams and the gang will do what they need to do, and they did. Tie game, but then we get to the end, and what should have been a 31-28 USC win became not that.
Yeah, so I was more interested in Jed Fish's overtime game management, but USC people were also pretty furious with the way that Lincoln managed the end of this game.
I think they have something there. Like, it became a scramble at the end there. USC, I think, should have been able to get a playoff before the field goal. So USC got down there and sort of messed around, farted around, and wasn't able to get a playoff. Caleb, I think, spikes it or clocks it or whatever. And then they bring the field goal team on. Jetfish ices him. Jetfish ices him, and the kicker does the thing where he like does the practice kick and like nonchalantly just knocks it through, and you're like, oh, okay, all right, not necessarily gonna be a college kicker situation here. I guess it was a college holder situation, if we're really gonna be honest. High snap, holder catches it awkward, kick does not go through, we go to overtime. And this is killing me across college football. If you score in the bottom of the first overtime and you have a chance to win the ball game, I do not understand why you don't go for two to win the game in that spot. That's insane to me at this point in time.
This is what's compelling about this to me. I am also kind of worshiping at the church of go for it most of the time in these situations, but I can accept that it's close to a coin flip play and that there might be room for us to be wrong about this a lot of the time.
But hell wants to give Caleb Williams more bites at the apple?
You got to understand the environment that you're in. If you're Arizona, you know that your defense is Arizona's defense, aka bad. You know that Caleb Williams is on the other sideline. You know that he's going to take the ball at the 25 yard line. If you think you're going to get a stop in the field of play in those 25 yards, like, that is on you for thinking that you are going to be better than you are against this young man. And also, and this is critical about the new era of college football that we're in, you are going to need, if you are sending the game to double overtime, which Jed Fish was doing by kicking the PAT, you are going to almost, not certainly, but very, very likely need a 2-point play to win the game, because you have to go for two.
Which means you have them.
You have them in the bag. And you're probably going to need it anyway. And you choose not to use it when succeeding means Caleb Williams can't come back on the field. It's really poor game management by Jed Fish. UCLA 25, Washington State 17. We talk a bit here about certain advanced stats. One of the ones that I like, but I understand that not everyone likes it, and we try not to beat it to death, is expected points added per play. I like it because it bakes in down and distance, and it kind of tells you how valuable your yards are. Knows the difference.
It's very good. It's very usable. I don't love it because it's not very intuitive, and the scale of it sucks, but by all means.
Not especially intuitive, but sometimes you'll understand. Washington State's offense, which is good, put up negative 0.55 expected points per play in this game, according to Game on Paper. That is in what the website classifies as the zeroth percentile, which I'm not even sure is a thing. 38% of Wazoo's runs didn't get past the line. 4-10. I mean, this is an incredibly hardcore UCLA defense.
8.8 yards was the average third down distance for Washington State. Washington State scored 10 offensive points.
Right. They had UCLA. A pick six that was like the entire field, like the better part of 100 yards.
It was
yards.
Like an 80-ish yard pick six.
Yes. And if it had been, I think it was 88, and if it had been 87, they probably were kicking three. Like, given the way that this went for UCLA's defense and Wazoo's offense. Colorado 27, Arizona State 24. Richard, explain why I shouldn't have a boomer take about Shadur going and taunting the student section after beating the bowl band worst team in the Pac-12 by 3 points.
Yeah, so I was on the field behind Shadur at the Oregon game. And as the clock ticked down, the fans behind the bench were literally just yelling, "Where's your Rolex, Shadur? Where's your Rolex?" over and over and over again. So I have an inkling that the student section or the Arizona fans were also doing that in some point in time during this game. And he's heard it over and over again. He's heard it over and over again in the last 3 weeks. And so, yeah, man, go flex on him. Who cares that you're punching down or whatever boomer take you're going to have about it? This is heel stuff. It's fun. Enjoy it.
Oregon State 52, Cal 40. Oregon State clearly good.
Yeah. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. That's a good football team.
DJ had statistically maybe the greatest game of his college career. They have two good running backs, Damian Martinez, who you know he's been around, and Deshaun Fenwick had a very nice night here as well. Like, these guys are fun to watch, and I respect that Jonathan Smith makes the quarterback position more playable than a lot of coaches. Like, you watch these guys, it's a ton of play action, a ton of RPO, and DJ does that stuff well, or certainly did it well in this game.
Onwards to the AAC, UAB 58, USF 35. I thought about picking USF in this game. I was very glad that I did not.
UAB's first FBS win. But to reiterate from last week when we weren't making fun of Dilfer for kind of going off on the sideline, they have some guys. Amari Thomas, the freshman wide receiver, is going to be a great player. He had a touchdown and a nice run in this game. Tajon Palmer had 119 on two catches. Large bills only, both for touchdowns. Like, they have some players. And maybe Trent Dilfer knew that when he was talking before the season.
Yeah, when he was doing the, like, don't raid my staff kind of thing. UConn 38, Rice 31. This was a sneaky SZD thinks you may both be bowl eligible bowl.
Before the year.
Before the year.
Yeah.
Then the year played out, and one of them, I think, still may be able to do that, and the other one clearly will not.
This is bad for the Rice agenda. UConn had been winless. Jackson Mitchell, very good linebacker, plays for the Huskies, had a 50-yard scoop and score in this game. UTSA 49, Temple 34, Frank Harris back and looking much more like Frank Harris. I think we can definitively say that young man was not healthy when he was farting around out there for the first couple weeks of the season. Took him out for a few weeks. Now he's back. Maybe we are back onto something with UTSA. Maybe.
Yeah, UTSA's, it ain't just Frank Harris. I mean, UTSA has been beaten to hell this season injury-wise, and they're going to need to, everybody got to get healthy there besides Frank, but especially Frank.
Defense is also a part of football, however, and was not very good. EJ Warner, the Temple quarterback, had a huge day, threw it 65 times for 472 yards. Troy 37, Arkansas State 3. Didn't quite make it through 30 minutes. Crazy. Well, you know, it's what's into a hurry up. It's 30 minutes or less or more. Arkansas State getting crushed here and, you know, sort of reverting to what it looked like in the first few weeks of the season. Also, in terms of reverting in a more positive direction, Troy, I'm glad we've kept them on the show because I think that we are seeing them round back into something a little more like what they were last year. I think John Summerall is a very good coach, very good defensive coach in particular. And against an Arkansas State offense that was on fire with Jalen Rayner playing quarterback for the last few weeks, they got nothing against this Troy D. Very impressive.
Louisiana 34, Texas State 30. I think Texas State's pretty good. Louisiana is just better. And I think Louisiana, honestly, to be able to come back from, because a lot of times, obviously, you know, your good G5 program loses its coach to the SEC school or the Power 5 school, and then bottoms out. I mean, a lot of that times that happens. Louisiana has not done that. They, yes, took a step back, but then came right on back, and they look to be the one of the teams that's the class of this division and conference.
Yeah, the West is very competitive in the Sun Belt in a way that certainly two off seasons ago, and maybe even this off season, we weren't entirely sure about. I think we're starting to see it coming into this off season, but Michael Desormeaux has gotten Louisiana back to a better place than they were after Billy Napier rolled out of town and took quite a bit with him. Old Dominion 17, Southern Miss 13. This is dialogue time, dialogue time, dialogue time. Will Hall. They've regressed. Southern Miss has. They're 1-5. That fan base is engaged. You can't just putter along there and expect people not to pay attention. So what's happening there? They will be digging in. Maybe we will be digging in the Mountain West. Wyoming 24, Fresno 19. Pokes are 27th in the new AP poll. I thought they should have been ranked this week and gotten that shine. Same thing with Air Force, which is also just in the first few spots right outside. Those teams play this week, and one of them is going to emerge from that game certainly ranked, I would think, and also as the clear Mountain West favorite with that nice little number.
Not just Mountain West favorite, my friend. If you want to do an early who's getting that, I don't know what bowl game it is, who's getting that New Year's Six bowl spot?
It's different every year. Yeah. Look, the Mountain West, pay attention. The top of the Mountain West this year, with including Fresno, which lost this game in some part because Mikey Keen had a really rough night, got hit with some dropsies and got hurt late in the game. But Fresno's a good program. We'll talk about another team in a second that you can never really forget about in this conference. This was a toss-up game, and Fresno, I think, did pretty well against Harrison Whaley, against Andrew Peasley. Wyoming had to sweat in part because they missed a field goal that would have stretched up in 5-8 late. But this is Craig Bull's best team at Wyoming, including all of those Josh Allen teams, or those couple of Josh Allen teams. And I think Wyoming fans should be very excited. Boise 35, San Jose State 27. Richard, Boise hasn't lost in conference yet. They're only 3-3, and I don't think anyone's impressed, but I also don't think you'd be shocked if they turned it on. They have what seems like a real honest to goodness two quarterback system. And I'm wondering how long that proceeds, because I think that the backup Maddox Madsen, I don't know if he is better, but he's been better than Taylen Green, who has not been as good as he was when he took the job last year from Hank Bachmeyer.
They were getting cooked in this game too, by the way.
Yep. They got it together. And as the night went on, the offense in particular, mostly because of the other quarterback, Madsen, did what it wanted. They wound up gaining 74% of their available yards in this game, which is very good. An indicator that you're having a lot of successful drives and moving the ball down the field. They're two different quarterbacks. Like, Boise uses Taylen Green for the designed runs, and they do not use Madsen in that way. They send him back to throw, and he can scramble if he wants. I would pick one, though. I would pick one going forward. Conference USA played an entirely weeknight slate this week. Jacksonville State 45, Middle Tennessee 31. The Gamecocks are the class of the FBS movers this year, and worth keeping an eye on. I mean, they're probably going to be bowl wins wise. They're going to be bowl eligible. Obviously, there are bureaucratic problems there. Liberty 21, Sam Houston 16. Sam Houston's defense was ready for FBS ball. The offense was not. I think that this is their best game yet, and that they will find some happiness sometime in the coming weeks. It's a loose prediction, but I think they will get on the board probably even a few times. I don't think they're as bad as 0-5, but obviously it's not good. Western Kentucky 35, Louisiana Tech 28. Western Kentucky should be considered the favorite in this conference. I think they are. We agree. We talked about this before the year that Liberty eventually should kind of stabilize at the top because of the money. But Western Kentucky's got Austin Reed. They got Malachi Corley. That's pretty good for Conference USA. Those two had 207 yards worth of connections and three touchdowns in this game.
Mississippi State 41, Western Michigan 28. Mississippi State needed a win here in this game. Could not take an L. And we're in it. We're in for kind of a scrap here and a fracas here. Not literally. But as far as the game is concerned with Western Michigan as this game went on.
Yeah, Western Michigan's got like a pretty total rebuild teardown situation right now with Lance Taylor. It's clear that State is one of the worst teams in the SEC, but to stay within 13 of an SEC team and to move the ball pretty well with some explosive plays is an encouraging data point for the fellows from Kalamazoo. Ohio 42, Kent 17. Kent, an even more dire rebuild probably than what Western Michigan has. And Ohio, Richard, is pretty salty when they play defense.
Best defense in the MAC. I'm not sure it's close.
NIU 55, Akron 14. Just kind of a check in here. It's not going well for Joe Moorhead at Akron. We thought that each of the last 2 years, but especially this year, like that would be a candidate for maybe the surprise MAC jump because of his.
You just want him to be the pit coach.
Bona fides as a play caller. I don't know that I do. He seemed like a natural candidate, but you're getting beat up like this at Akron. You're getting beat up like this at Akron. And in that conference, you don't need to be this bad for 2 years. You can rise pretty quickly, as we've talked about. Miami of Ohio, 27, Bowling Green, 0. I continue to think that Miami is a top three team in the MAC. It will be interesting. They play against the Bobcats in a couple weeks, on October 28th, in a game that seems like it'll decide that half of the MAC and is a real opportunity for Chuck Martin, for Brett Gabbert and the crew to have a really good year for the Redhawks. But also, Miami shuts out the team that just beat Georgia Tech. And Georgia Tech just beat Miami. So that's a transitive victory for Miami of Ohio over Miami of Florida. And sure, Miami of Florida beat Miami of Ohio back in week one. Yeah, but
can't do the transitive thing when they actually played.
But it's a great transitive win to sort of counteract the actual loss that they suffered in that game.
I disagree.